Hello, everybody. You're listening to and watching Wake Up with Patty Catter. And today I have Glenn Williams with me on the show. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Patty. It's great to be here.
Thank you. So before I waste anybody's time, I just want you to introduce yourself. You have a really exciting background, and we're going to talk about some pretty important things today.
I was a police officer and a detective for 26 years and loved the job, and had a lot of experiences that most everyday cops have where we see things that people don't want to see. And over the years, I ended up developing a PTSD. And the PTSD affected my life dramatically, even though I can't blame it on the PTSD, I can only blame it on the choices I made related to it, because I'm huge on self-accountability. Anyway, I witnessed a lot of things that I really didn't want to see. And when I finally retired after 26 years, I kind of floundered. I actually ended up divorced because of issues related to PTSD, bankrupt, lost everything. And then as I was going through my life, I spent my 3 years up at my cabin alone up in the mountains, and I got back in touch with who I am. And because I was able to do that, I was able to open up and start healing from PTSD and working through. And it's an ongoing healing process because it never quite goes away. It's always there lurking in the background, but it can be managed and dealt with. And I've learned to do that. And now, because of that, I found my purpose, and I travel around and I talk to police departments and police officers and public safety and medical people that have experienced trauma in their lives. And I talk about communication and improving relations, because it's only through communication that we can work through these issues. And that could be communications with a doctor or with a counselor or a friend, but it's only through communication with our spouses that we maintain our important relationships, the relationships that everybody I talk to says are the most important in their life. I blew that once, I screwed up, and if I can help somebody not make the same mistakes I did, then we all win.
I understand that for sure. It's a lifelong process we go through, right?
Yes.
Good times, screw up, learn from it, teach other people. Good times, screw up again. Do it, repeat, rinse and repeat.
Rinsing.
So one of the questions I have for you is, when you were younger, did you want to be a police officer, or when did you make that decision? That's a big decision.
That was actually not even on my map. At all as growing up, I wanted to be a veterinarian.
What?
But physics and chemistry in college kicked my hind end, and that dream went away. And so I was working actually at the post office. Had a family, two kids at the time, and I heard about the Postal Inspection Service, which is federal law enforcement. And that's when I suddenly got excited. And I had partied my way out of school with really dropped from a 3.9 GPA to a 1.9 and flunked out basically. So I had to rebuild my life. I moved to another state to do that. And then when I found out what I wanted to do, and that's when I found out about the federal law enforcement, I knew that's what I wanted to do. I had to have a college degree. So I went back to school at night, worked full time during the day, pulled straight A's for 3 years so I could get my GPA up over 3.0 and applied. And unfortunately, I have diabetes, and they disqualified me because I have diabetes. They could do that back then. So I did not know what to do at that point. I was lost. I finally found out what I wanted to do. And then a friend said, "Well, why don't you go apply at the local police department here? They're hiring." And I got lucky, I got hired, and it was a great decision. It was the way things were meant to be.
That's amazing. So, what was one of, I want to ask you two questions. The first one is going to be, what was one of the hardest calls you had to go on as a police officer, if you can talk about that?
Yeah, I'll probably tear up a little bit. Kids are always the hardest ones. And one day I went into work at 6 in the morning and hadn't even sat down at the briefing yet and got a call of a missing child, a 3-year-old boy. And So we immediately left and went out and onto the to the location, an apartment complex. And first thing we do is search the people's apartment because 80% of kids are found hiding in the house somewhere. And then we couldn't find him there, so we searched the area and asked, where's his favorite playground, where's his friends live, et cetera, et cetera. And we searched for about 45 minutes and couldn't find the young man. As I pulled into the apartment complex, I'd noticed this fountain and a pond that they had, and some teenagers the night before had put soap suds in it. And so there were soap suds probably 10, 15 feet high and overflowing onto the parking area and stuff. And we had just kind of gone past that. Well, we gathered near that spot to reorganize and continue the search. And as we were there, a breeze came up and parted the bubbles, and one of us saw a foot in the water. And so I grabbed the young man out of the water and did CPR and got him to fire, let them take care of things. And they were on their way to the hospital, and unfortunately, the young man didn't make it.
Man.
Held it together long enough to get the family taken care of and get them up to the hospital and, do all the professional things we have to do. And luckily, I had a good leader that day. I was an officer 18 years at that point, 17 years. And for the first time in my career, somebody asked me if I was okay. For the first time in 17 years. And I looked at him, I said, "No, I'm not." And he said, "Brother, don't worry about your report." He says, "Go take care of yourself. And then when you're done, come on back in and get your report done." Because usually we go call to call to call. We don't get time to do anything. So I went and sat in a parking lot, a church parking lot, backed up against the wall there, and I just cried my eyes out for about a half hour. And then went back to work.
Yeah, people don't really think about police officers having those feelings. And I know it's so easy for someone to think, okay, I'm going to call 911 and these police officers better show up. They just do their job and they leave and they have no heart inside of them. And that's far from the truth. Those of you listening, majority of everybody listening to my show are very, very pro law enforcement, pro military, pro Americana. And we understand the sacrifices that are made to serve communities. When I hear individuals bashing police departments and such, I know they don't truly understand what it takes, and it's a lot. So
Yeah.
I, yeah.
These are things that officers see every day. And officers, my saying is, officers deal with bad people or good people having a really bad day. We never get to go out and see and do the fun things in with people because that's not what we're doing. That's
Right.
we're having to clean up the messes. And it does wear on officers tremendously. I'm no superhero. I'm no super cop. I just was an everyday officer. And yet, I was in over 40, almost 50 foot chases and fights. I was in, I've seen when I worked for transit police, and when I retired, I went to work for another department, and having to go pick up body parts after accidents, and just things that people don't want to see. See people at their worst. And that it wears on you. It does wear on officers, and many haven't been aware of it in the past, or just ignored it.
Yeah, I think in today's day and age too, I don't go into a lot of politics on the show, but I think it's noteworthy to mention that a lot of police officers are just taking so much heat because in every occupation, you're going to have one or two bad eggs. But that said, the majority of those, especially in law enforcement or our first responder community, you're doing a job because you really want to help people. It's not about becoming a millionaire. Anybody who's in this career field knows that. It's really truly the heart to serve the community.
It is, and that's what it's all about. And I do get tired of, "Oh, well, they just want to go out and shoot people." No, we don't. I mean, I've had a case where I came really close, while a car was running me down. I was pulling the trigger at the driver's forehead, and I got lucky that day, and nobody died and nobody got hurt. But those are not things that that we want to do, or that we want to we just we want to go out and serve the community and take care and make sure our community's safe for our families, your families, and everybody else around.
A lot of my listeners do struggle with post-traumatic stress, either from military service or their time as police officers. And one of the things I do want you to address is talking about PTS a little bit more. I am apprehensive to always put the D on the end of it because it's really a response, not quite a disorder. But at the same time, for VA purposes, that's what it's called. And for other military or health professionals call it post-traumatic stress disorder. But I'd like to hear in your words what your experience has been with post-traumatic stress and what advice you have with those who suffer from it.
That's actually, I go around and I talk to police departments and public safety about that. In fact, I'm in another state right now because I have a presentation on Tuesday coming up, and I had one last week in the same state, so I just stayed out here. And what I, for me, PTSD is what it's been called. I agree with you, PTSI, post-traumatic stress illness, or something is more appropriate, I think. Because of my behaviors related to PTSD and the behaviors that I chose to exhibit, and I chose not to deal with, that's why they were exhibited. Because back then we didn't talk about anything like this. If we did, they would find us unfit for duty and get rid of us. And that's changing, and I'm grateful for that. I ended up divorced, bankrupt, totally destroyed my life. Then it took me a few years, and I didn't know then what was going on. And I'm looking back on a lot of ways because the things that I did, you have anger, is a common exhibition of trait with PTSI. In angry response, I'm shutting down, withdrawing from friends and family, there's so many behaviors. Actually, even getting that many foot chases and fights was relevant to PTSI because we crave that adrenaline rush. And that's what does it. And I look back now and I think, man, how many of those? And I can tell you four or five that I know I talked myself into because I wanted it. And it had nothing to do with the person. It was me. And so those are all things that happen. How do we work through this? I mean, I was in the Denver airport last month, flying to do a speaking engagement, and I have a service dog, and he goes with me everywhere. And as we went into Denver, I packed all of his stuff in our check-in baggage, and I only had two things that I could work with him on, training things. So it was a big mistake on my part. I had his pinch collar, and the only other thing I could do is submit him, which means you put him down, put your hands on him, hold him until they relax, and let him know who the alpha is so they pay attention to you. And as we go, he'd been misbehaving at the Salt Lake Airport, but I'd already checked bags. I didn't have anything to do with. But we got through that. He was fine on the plane, and then we got in Denver. He started again at the airport. He gets all hyped and excited, and I couldn't get him to do what he was supposed to be doing. So I put him down in a submission, and as I'm putting him down in a submission, I had this gal. I had no clue where she came back. She's right on my shoulder, started yelling and screaming at me. That's not how you treat a service dog, and it startled me so much. I swung my hand up because I thought I was being attacked. And spun around. And so now I've got a real heart rate's going up, everything's going up. And this gal kept yelling and screaming until there's 20 or 30 people around me. And it was so bad. My wife was in the restroom, heard it. She came out and tried to calm the gal down, and she wouldn't calm down. Threatened to have me kicked off my plane, threatened to, not allow me to get boarded and all this, but and just going off. Which is kind of funny because I had just gotten off my plane and I wasn't boarding, and she was just totally out of left field. But it did something that I'd never had happen before. I've had nightmares, and I've worked through, and I was having three, four, five nightmares a month, and now I'm down to two, three a year. So I'm working through those things. But as she kept going, all of a sudden everything just went gray. I could not see. Now I've been to that airport numerous times. I knew where the dog room is, and that's where I was going with him. And I wandered around lost. Everything was just gray and tunnel visioned, and I'd never had that experience before. And I was lost in an airport I know for a long time. And I wandered around and I couldn't find my way. And I finally found the room. I probably walked by it seven or eight times and didn't see it. That's how my mind was just weird that day. I finally made it down to the baggage carousel, and I had been wandering around lost so long that the only person at the baggage carousel was my wife with our bag. Everybody else was gone. And yeah, then I had nightmares for 4 nights in a row. I've never had that. 4 nights in a row. And I couldn't figure it out. Well, I used some of the things that I have learned to do to work through that. On that fourth day, I mean, I was still pondering, trying to figure out what had happened. I went up with my stepdaughter's boyfriend, and we all went up to ski resort. I got out, and instead of driving around, I walked, and I got out in the trees, and I got out in nature and fresh air and exercise, and that started breaking things loose a little bit. And then we went up on top of the mountain. I got some good physical exercise because I hadn't skied in quite a while, and I went skiing for half a day and worked myself through and was focusing on other things. And was able to do that. And I stood up on the mountain and looked at two valleys, one on each side, and it was like amazingly beautiful. So I got back in touch with nature, and then I was actually finally, until that point, I wasn't able to talk about what had happened. I finally was able to open up and talk about what had happened, because nobody knew. They just knew I was acting weird. And then no more nightmares after that. After talking about it. And so that's why I talk about communication, how important communication is. Because if we don't talk about it, it will eat us alive.
Yeah, and it's so hard to know also the way PTSD affects one person, it might be different from somebody else. I think that's the majority of the reason that we do have such a hard time still kind of processing through post-traumatic stress, especially maybe if you're not the person who has it and you may have a family member or a loved one who has post-traumatic stress and you're thinking, gosh, I can't ever figure out how to communicate with them because that their emotions are always changing, right? And it's true. I think it's hard.
Well, and it comes down to the person with post-traumatic stress has to say take a very hard, self-accountable, deep look at themselves and choose to change the behaviors. Even when you do that, it doesn't go away completely. Like this one, I hadn't had an issue for a year or so, over a year, but all of a sudden, boom, here it was. And so it does rear up its ugly head every once in a while, and sometimes when you least expect it. The key is you've got to find the tools and then put those tools to use. And it took me 2, 3 days, 4 days before I finally was able to put those tools to use, because I couldn't talk. I was gone, and I couldn't figure it out. Once I did, and I hadn't figured it out, but once I went, wait a minute, I got to stop this. And I know the tools. We're going up here tomorrow. I'm putting them to use. You know, breathing, meditation. If you ever heard of singing bowls or Tibetan bowls, they're amazing for healing and working through things. I actually like for meditation, I like to go get massages because if I just go and let it go, that's like meditation. Then there's all kinds of medical things that you can do. Talk to a counselor or therapist, and that's a must at some point. But open up, and it's like back in the day, my first wife, I didn't tell her anything about what was happening at work. I didn't want her to stress. I didn't want to bother her. Didn't say telling her anything. My wife now, I got lucky because I was able to change and open up. And that was choices and work that I did for over a year just to get it so I could get things figured out within me. And I was able, we have no secrets. She knows everything about me from my past to what happens today. And I know that having a good, firm, open, honest relationship helps. And then as we move through things, there's other medical things you have. Can't remember what the name of it is, but you take some injections and they help you out. And I just heard about those, but I won't use drugs. I absolutely refuse. And then, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of new treatments out. Ketamine is one of them, which I refuse to take drugs, so I haven't tried that one. My son was actually blown up in Afghanistan and has PTSD, and he has not gone that route yet either. We both are a little leery about that, but I've heard great things, and I have friends that actually run ketamine clinics now. There's other medications that they can give for anxiety, because PTSD or PTSI or whatever you want to call it. There's lots of anxiety involved at times. And so we kind of work our way through those things.
Yeah, those are some great points. I actually was just talking to somebody this week about the ketamine treatments, and then they have all of the psychedelic kind of treatments that are available now. And it's kind of funny. You're like, I don't take any medications, no drugs. And I feel the same way too. And it's probably because I'm brought up in a military and I should say a police family. And then of course my husband was military, but it's like the police family. It's like, no, say no to drugs. The era that I grew up, it was just like no drugs. So,
yeah. And now I see everything being legalized. That was totally illegal back when I was working.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So many of our friends were arresting people for marijuana because it was illegal. And now it's like, oh yeah.
So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see what happens there. Yeah. So, Glenn, I was wondering, is there one specific time? I know you already had mentioned this, the tragedy that, of the little boy, but is there anything else that you'd like to add of, well, what is a trial that you've had in your life and how did you overcome it with triumph? And it sounds like there's just so many times that you've been through such hardships in life and then overcome them and still working on them.
The trials for me, you know, I had my first wife. I actually, and this again, it's PTSD related, although it was my choice. Okay. Putting things at risk is PTSD related. And when you put your thing that's most important to your family at risk, then that gets that adrenaline bump going. And I had an affair. And it's nothing I'm proud of, but I did. And that also, well, that didn't lead to my divorce because nobody knew but me and the woman involved at the time. I would never, ever do that again because that is not who I am. And that's not who I want to be. And so I end up ruining my life, bankrupt, living in a garbage apartment that's all I could afford. And that was a real struggle for me, because I was alone. And then the second marriage ended up in a divorce. So now I looked at myself as a two-time loser. And so relationships are important to me, very important to me. But I got to take a really hard look at me. And I lived at my cabin for 3 years by myself after the second divorce. And I had to figure out who I was again, because I had forgotten. I let the job become my life. I was a cop. I am a cop. And that's who I was. And guys and gals, if you're in the business, it's a job. It's not who you are. So identify and know who you are. And the only way to do that is to really take a hard look. And that's one of the things in my class that I teach. I have a hard time getting people. I teach firearms also. And people, I can fill those classes every day, But nobody wants to do the hard work of looking inside themselves to figure out what it is they contributed to the issues. And I finally did that. And once I got looking, I opened up. And now my wife says, I talk too much. I'm too open. And my response is, do you want me to change? Oh, no, not at all. Because being open allowed me to meet her and get to know her. I didn't even meet her in person for the first 3 weeks. We talked every night on the phone, though, for several hours. And it was amazing. And those are the types of relationships that I have been envious in the past, and I'm lucky to have one now and be part of one. And that's, again, what do I contribute? And it so all comes back to self-accountability. As far as, wow, my life has taken a total turn. I wrote a book. We just had an award-winning documentary released in December, and it's won a ton of awards, and I'm proudest of the Best Message Award. And it talks about how trauma affects law enforcement families. It's called Is There Something Going On at Home? And we get to work at working our way through things so that we don't have negative effects on our family. And it takes a lot of work to do that, but if that's the most important thing to us, which most people say, then it's well worth the effort.
Absolutely. The funny thing is, we try not to tell other people our feelings when we think that they can't handle it. But the thing is, we're the ones that can't handle it. And usually the person that we're talking to is the most understanding, right? So it's kind of funny how we think that we're shielding everybody else or protecting other people when we don't want to tell them something tough, but it puts up a barrier and it hurts them worse if we don't talk.
It puts a brick in the wall. And I spoke with the spouses, FOP auxiliary wives. And it was interesting because when their husbands aren't talking, or their spouse, because there's female officers also, I don't want to degenerate that. But when their partner's not talking, their mind goes, okay, what's going on? What's he doing? And where does the mind always seem to go? It takes us to the worst place. And so, oh, he's having an affair. That's why he's not talking to me anymore. Or things like that, when in reality, he just doesn't know what he's doing. Could he be possibly having an affair? I don't know. But chances are probably not.
Absolutely.
He
Yeah.
doesn't want to talk and bring it back up because it hurts us too when we do that.
Yeah. Oh, Glenn, could you please share where everybody can find your book and where people can tune into your social media?
I'm on Twitter, under GDUB author, and my book is, oops, over
Uh-oh.
there. I got it blurred. Anyway,
Uh-oh.
Bridging the Gap. There we go. There we go. Bridging the Gap. It's on Amazon and it's on at Barnes and Noble and a whole bunch of others that I didn't even know until a couple few weeks ago. And take a look. You can get on Amazon Prime our documentary, Is There Something Going On at Home? It's a 47 minutes. It's not long, it's a short, but you will be amazed at how powerful, and it'll bring some things up. And you know, one of the things it brought up to me is when you guys are getting to the age of retirement from this job, have a purpose. Find something that you want to do. And that doesn't mean I'm going to go fishing, because that'll last for 3 or 4 weeks and you'll be bored.
Yeah,
But
I'm
enjoy your
sure.
family. And my purpose, I ended up finding out I'm actually a pretty good author, and I'm writing two more books, and I have about five on the list to do. And I just got approached about doing one on leadership. And so those are things. And then I never expected to be in a film, but I still kind of not sure how that really happened, but I'm now in an award-winning film. And things are just growing and growing and growing, but I'm still out there working it because I can't slow down. It's kind of hard once you retire.
Oh my gosh. I know. We have these friends and they're all like, "Oh, I'm retired." And then 2 weeks later, "Oh, just joking. Now I'm doing this and that." And you can't really just retire.
No.
Well, thank you so much, Glenn, for being on my show. I appreciate you very much. And For those listening, I'm going to be sure to share Glenn's links, and I want you all to check out his book. And Glenn, let's catch up again in maybe a year or so, unless you have something before then tell us when your next book is ready, maybe.
I will do that. Yeah. I'll let you know. And I mean, there's so many things in the works and they're just happening. I'm having a hard time keeping up.
That's exciting. That's great. Thanks, Glenn. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Until next time, be sure to go and listen to some of the show archives if you've missed any. And Glenn, I can't wait to hear about your next book.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.